Blog Talk Radio.
Doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy. It takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version. Hung with the wrong person, got a strong one. Sniffing up drugs, all in her nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep and the crowds you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hands in the air and take the vow. I know I can,
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be. For grown looking girls who's only 10, the ones who watch videos and do what they see, as cute as can be, up in the club with fake ID. Careful, for you meet a man with HIV. You can host a TV like Oprah Winfrey. Whatever you decide, be careful, some men be rapists, so act your age, don't pretend to be older than you are. Give yourself time to grow. You're thinking he can give you wealth, but so young boys, you can use a lot of help, you know. You're thinking life's all about smoking and ice. You don't want to be my age and can't read and write. Begging different women for a place to sleep at night. Smart boys turn them in and do whatever they wish. If you believe you can achieve, then say it like this. I know I can,
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be.
I'll be where I wanna
now,
be.
Go. We came to this country, we were kings and queens, never porch monkeys. There was empires in Africa called Kush, Timbuktu, where every race came to get books to learn from black teachers who taught Greeks and Romans, Asian Arabs, and gave them gold. When gold was converted to money, it all changed. Money then became empowerment for Europeans. The Persian military invaded, they heard about the gold, the teachings, and everything sacred. Africa was almost robbed naked. Slavery was money, so they began making slave ships. Egypt was the place that Alexander the Great went. He wasn't shocked that the mountains were black faces. Shot up their nose to impose what basically still goes on today, you see. If the truth is told, the youth can grow. They learn to survive until they gain control. Nobody says you have to be gangsters. Read more, learn more, change the globe. Ghetto children, do your thing. Hold your head up, little man, you're a king. Young princess, when you get your wedding ring, your man is saying, she's my queen. I know I can,
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be. Y'all, save the music, y'all. Save the music, y'all. Save the music, y'all. Save the music.
When Harriet Tubman used the Underground Railroad to bring slaves to the North, what she was doing was illegal. And when Susan B. Anthony voted in a presidential election in 1872, what she did was also illegal. Meet Kelly Williams Bolar. In 2006, she removed her children from dangerous, failing public schools and used her father's address to enroll her daughters in better schools in a safer neighborhood just 7 minutes away.
I was charged with numerous felonies. They said I was guilty of stealing an education.
but all I was guilty of was wanting the best for my daughters.
As we celebrate Women's History Month, let us have the courage, like those brave women who came before us, to challenge unjust laws. We're not advocating that women break the law, but we are asking you to consider whether laws that discriminate against women, children, and families are just. Please visit BernardCenter.org to find out more about equality in education.
I did things wrong, but I love my kids, and I would have done anything for my children.
Her case fueled a national debate over school residency. Kelly Williams Bolar, the Akron mother convicted of illegally enrolling her daughters into...
Hello, my name is Kelly Williams Bolar. And as I look back on this footage, oh my God, it was so surreal. I couldn't believe that I was going to jail. I couldn't believe that me and my poor father was standing trial together. Now, what I did was wrong. I know I shouldn't have done that, but I just wanted the best for my children. But there I am. I'm in jail. 9 days. And my poor father, he never came home. But you know what? I'm here today to tell you that we all have trials and tribulations. And when we do have these trials and tribulations, that means that it's for us to give back to the community. We are supposed to help other people. We tell our stories. First, it helps with our depression. Second, it helps with other people to heal. So that is why we're here.
All right. Now, did you break the law?
Did I use my father's address?
Well, I don't know, baby. It'd be awful nice, but they got rules. You got to go to the school where you live.
Yeah, that's the rule. If you attend public school, if you can't afford to escape the government's horrible school monopoly. The movie was based on the book A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. It described a family that was desperate to give their kids a better education. The father suggests school hopping by using a house address that isn't theirs.
Why don't we maybe borrow it for now, like we make out it's ours? Then your address would be, why don't we maybe borrow it for now, like we make out it's ours? Then your address would be 98 Hibbert Avenue, starting right now. Then you see, they gotta transfer you from your old school. This ain't exactly according to the rules.
You mean it's wrong?
No, sir, not by a jugful it ain't wrong.
It ain't wrong. But Kelly Williams Bolar went to jail for it. She lives in Akron, Ohio, and her daughters were stuck in a school that rated second lowest in the state. Kevin Chavis is with the American Federation for Children, a group that's trying to change the rules to allow moms like Kelly to have a choice about where their kids go to school. So, Kelly, you went, they sentenced you to 10 days in jail, which you served.
I served 9 out of 10.
What was that like?
That was very difficult because I had never been to jail before, ever. When I was in the holding cell, I cried for like 12 hours straight. It was just...
And the other prisoners, did they say, you're in here for what?
Yes, they did. They were, one lady, you know, she was like, well, what's the matter? You know, why are you crying so? And I explained to her, and she was like, really? She was like, that's like nothing, you know, compared to what she had did.
It's so unique. And I fight every day. And there's so many other people that fight like we do, that fight and want so much for their children. So that's my story in a nutshell. Can't say anymore. I might really just crack up.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuned in to Tribe Family Channel in association with Gumbo for the Soul Literacy Program, presenting the recipe for literacy in the Black community with Kelly Williams Bolar, parent advocate, as seen on Dr. Phil, Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC. I am Beverly Black, and I am the creator of the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community based on the Gumbo for the Soul publications anthology, Gumbo for the Soul, the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, published 2005. And you can get that via Amazon.com or Gumbo for the Soul International. Gumbo for the Soul International is a family, excuse me, Tribe Family Channel is a Gumbo for the Soul International family brand, as is the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. Now, about Kelly Williams Bolar. Kelly Williams Bolar is an African-American single mother out of Ohio. She made national headlines in January of 2011 when she was convicted on two felony counts of tampering with court records and sentenced to 10 days in jail with 3 years probation for illegally enrolling her kids in the predominantly white and higher quality school district next door. Fearing for the safety of her two daughters in the Akron school district, Williams Bolar used her father's address in the nearby suburban district of Copley Fairlawn to enroll her children in what she believed was a better performing and safer school environment. In handing down what many considered a harsh sentence, Judge Patricia Cosgrove specifically noted that the court was making an example out of Williams Bolar so that others who think they might defraud the school system perhaps will think twice. Williams Bolar had been working as a teacher's aide in the Akron City School District while taking night classes to earn a teaching degree. Two felony convictions would likely have jeopardized a future teaching career. Fortunately, Ohio Governor John Kasich intervened by reducing her charges to misdemeanors, calling it a second chance rather than a pass. Kelly Williams Bolar will be hosting the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community right here live on Tribe Family Channel. Today, I introduce to you Kelly Williams Bolar. Hello, Kelly. How are you, sweetie?
Well, hello, and thank you so much. It's such an honor to be on your program today. Thank you.
It's an honor and it's a privilege for us to have you. I want to commend you first and foremost for your activism. And I also want to let our listeners know that this show is dedicated to your father. Tell our listeners your father's name.
Okay. My father's name was Edward Lamont Williams.
Edward Lamont Williams. The Recipe
yes.
for Literacy in the Black Community, debuting March 15th, 2018, moderated by your daughter and keeping the torch of activism that the two of you started, having that torch lit and being carried on through this medium is our honor, our privilege, and our pleasure. We honor you, Mr. Williams. We honor you, Ms. Bolar, and we thank you for being here on the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. And we're going to allow you to tell your story so that our listeners will know why this show and this season is dedicated to your father. And we'll go into a little bit about the very key points that we know you want to ensure that our listeners are aware of. And I also want to say that the excerpt from online that I just read, that is one person's viewpoint and opinion. So we don't necessarily agree with everything the way that article was composed, but for the most part, we wanted to make sure that the information therein was given as it was accounted for during that January 2011 period. However, having you right here, live here, to tell us what happened, how it happened and how it unfolded throughout the season that led up to your writing your book, Mom, Justice is in the Eye of the Beholder?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the title?
Yes, it's called The Mom. And, quote, justice is just like beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder. And it's something behind that, why I named it that, is profound. So I will get
absolutely
to that, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for that. I closed the reference window that I was to read that from, but we also want to thank the sponsors of this show, Genius is Common, Mr. Bruce George, and you can visit Genius is Common at www.geniusiscommon.com. And we also want to thank Mr. Larry D. Davis and his book, The Education of the African American Child in Today's School System, is available on Amazon.com, as well as Kelly Williams Bolar's book, and also Gumbo for the Soul Publications, Gumbo for the Soul, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, so named for this program. So, what brings us to this time and place here? It's an epiphany almost, if you will, listening to the first audio after Nas's I Know I Can in the beginning. It was Women's History Month when you did that interview. So here we are again honoring women.
Wow.
So I honor you this Women's History Month, and I want to thank you for not remaining silent about your story and for the activism and the work that you do. And I also want to mention that we honor your mother, Mrs. Williams, and we also honor your two daughters while we're honoring you this Women's History Month. And so with that, I am going to yield the mic to you, and you can tell us your story in increments, as you will, in your own candid, transparent way. And just to kind of guide the conversation along, start from the beginning, of this journey. Where did this journey begin?
Okay. Oh, my. And just thank you again. I just have to reiterate that. Thank you again. But, okay.
It's our honor.
I'm going to start this off, and I'm kind of going to go even more back, okay, so people can kind of really get a gist of what kind of person how I grew up, okay? So just mm-hmm. giving a little reference to that.
Absolutely. You know, take your time, too. We have plenty of time.
Okay. For the most mm-hmm. part, I was born and raised in Akron, Ohio, but there were times that I did not live in Akron, and I lived in North Carolina and Georgia coming up. And we did a lot of moving around. And it resulted in my grades not being the best coming up in school. So I always thought, you know, being stationary is the best way to be as far as, you know, education-wise. It was hard for me to adapt to maybe the South versus living in the North. School systems were different as far as me catching up or me falling behind. And that took an effect on my grades. And so coming up, you know, I would live in Ohio. Then a couple of times we lived in the South, North Carolina and Georgia. And I remember saying to myself, you know, when I become an adult and I have a family, I didn't want my children, I didn't know if I was going to have a boy or girl or whatever, but I didn't want my children to be subject to a lot of moving around. So that was always in the back of my mind somewhere. So, okay. I grew up, you know, I get married, you know, I'm living a life, or I think I'm living, you know, a decent good life, and you know, end up meeting a man, and life was fine, but we did have domestic issues, and so I end up, you know, getting a divorce from him. And by that point, I had two daughters, two beautiful daughters, about 4 years difference in age. And once we got our divorce, I moved onto a metropolitan house alone, you know, with my daughters. And the area that I lived in was not, you know, was not a high society area. You know, it was a metropolitan home. The area was, it had crime issues. Oh, and the school, as far as the grade for the school, it was like an F at that time. And so, you know, we're graded on a scale of, you know, A through F. And at that time, that school was an F. I was in college trying to finish my school to become a teacher slash social worker. I always, you know, work with children. I've always worked with children, and that was my passion. Well, 1 year, me and my father, you know, my parents would help me. They always helped me with my girl, especially when I, you know, got a divorce from my former husband. So my father one day said, hey, you know, why don't you bring the girls out here? Well, actually, he had said it more on more than one occasion. And then finally, maybe 1 year, he had mentioned that on more than one occasion. And 1 year I said, you know, okay, I'm going to do it. I know the school that I had worked at, I knew that there were many kids that did not live in the district. So I was thinking, okay, so I'm going to try it. I'm going to do it as well. So I enrolled my kids using my parents' school district, using their address for that district. My goodness, that first year, they excelled that school that they both attended. One was going into junior high. The other one was going into fourth grade. And they excelled beyond my expectations. They had all the resources that you can possibly want. They even had acres and acres of land for science, a greenhouse. I mean, it was just phenomenal. The schools were phenomenal. So I was, you know, I was more than pleased. And the following year, we, you know, proceeded to do the same thing. I didn't, you know, of course, we just went on and sent them back because that was time for them to go back to school. And into the school year, maybe right before the holidays, I got a letter saying that they had, you know, followed me around for a couple of weeks and they see that I did not live in the district. And so they wanted me to remove my daughters. So me and my father, we was like, you know, maybe if we get this grandparent power of attorney, you know, maybe that would help. And so we proceeded. We went to the court and we went and we got the grandparent power of attorney. And the courts, you know, granted that. But and the school did accept the grandparent power of attorney. But that was like basically saying too little, too late. Maybe we should have mentioned that prior. So they fought against that whole entire year. And by June, I guess, you know, they kept going to the court. So by June, the judge said, hey, you know what, just take them out. And that's it, just take them out. And so my father and I, you know, I took them out. My father didn't enroll them. I did. I just used his address. So I removed my daughters from the school, and I sent them back to the inner city. I sent them back to Akron school system. The first year, everything went fine, nothing, you know, nothing unusual. Then the second year, maybe 18 months into this, after we had taken them out of that school district, I received an indictment, a postcard indictment, and it was Kelly Williams Bolar, or Ohio versus Kelly Williams Bolar. And I was, you know, a bit confused, wasn't for sure what this was. I had never received an indictment, didn't really know what an indictment was. But I completely understood that my father would know. So I remember that day very clearly. I called my dad and I asked him, or I explained to him I had received this card, and it was, you know, Ohio versus Kelly Williams Bolar, and it was a postcard. And I remember him telling me to come over. He was like, come over now, let me look at it. And when I got over to his home, I remember him sitting at this particular desk that he always sat at every day. And I remember him telling me, go check my mailbox. So he knew. And so there it was. He received the same thing. So we had a date, a court date to go to. So we scheduled the court date. We appeared for that court date, and we're sitting there, and we're looking at all these people, all these people that's committing all these, you know, major, you know, like rape, and just people are shackled up and just all these crimes, and we're looking at them.
Right, you're in criminal court. You're in superior court, criminal court.
Absolutely.
You know, and they mix it all up. So the jurors' box will have prisoners in their suits chained and shackled. And they go through all criminal cases. So you pretty much felt like you didn't belong there, basically, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I felt, I felt absolutely out of place.
Thank you.
I'm like, oh my God, you know, these people are shackled up. These people are, you know, rapists and
murderers. These are criminals. These are real criminals.
Right, yeah, embezzled, people who are embezzling from banks and different things of that nature. I mean, and so we're looking at these people, and then finally our name, you know, our number, our name comes up, and it's the prosecutor, and they're saying, you know, it's for you, and they're, you know, charging you with, they're giving you these felonies for grand theft and tampering with documents. And I was like, oh my God, you know, it was like 18, it was literally almost 2 years ago. It was like 18 months ago. So I wasn't for sure, you know, I was still in a fog. Me and my dad, we were both in a fog. Didn't it really have the money to go and pursue some big time attorney and all these things, you know? So it was just a time that we just didn't know what was going on. So, but anyway, you know, they set up a time, they set up a court date. We started the procedure. Okay, we both stood trial together. If you see any of the footage, you'll see, you know, that he and I sat on. We endured this together, side by side. We had hired one attorney, and so our case maybe went on for a full week, and for maybe not quite a full week. I can't honestly remember how long it went on, but it was several days for sure. And the, you know, they had, now this is one moment that I must mention. Jury out, they asked us to step outside of the courtroom. So my father and I, we were sitting on this long bench, and I remember the prosecutor, one of the prosecutors, walking out laughing and basically rubbing elbows with, you know, the treasurer from the school. And I remember him saying this quote, and this is the quote that I incorporated for my subtitle. He looked over at me and my father with a smirk on his face, and he said, yeah, justice is just like beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder. And when he said that, I never heard of a phrase, a quote put that way in this context. So I knew, I looked at my daddy, I was like, we are in trouble, you know, for someone to make that in that way, in that wording. And I just knew we were in trouble. So, so the process began. Of course, I got found guilty, you know, on all accounts, you know, grand theft, tampering documents, and so they sentenced me to 10 days in jail. I spent 9 of the 10 days, 3 years probation. You know, I had 80 hours of community service, 40 hours of counseling. Oh my goodness, it was a nice long laundry list of things that fingerprinting. I had to go get my mouth swabbed as if I was some murderer or something. You know, my fingerprints are in the system. My DNA is in the system now for life. I remember just, yeah, it was so much to deal with that. I went through a deep depression. I mean, a deep depression. Believe that. Now, mind you, this was my first time ever getting in any kind of trouble. So the judge made, you know, she sentenced me, and she also said that while I was on probation, if I had done anything at all, which I had not planned on doing anything, because, like, I never really got into anything, you know, I never done anything wrong, no more than maybe a parking ticket and parking in the wrong area or something like that. So she said that if I had done anything wrong while I was on probation, I would do 5 plus 5, and it would run concurrent. That means I will be gone for 10 years. I got my babies to bring up. All these things is just affecting me. My father was not charged because, first of all, he did not enroll my daughters. And secondly, you know, I did that. I enrolled them. And so they couldn't charge him for grand theft. That was his home. He found that land. He built that home on that land. So they could not, they could not charge him for that. So they sent my, so they sent me off to jail, and my father went home. And I remember that first night that I was in the holding, like, there's an area that they hold you at before you go into the other. I was in the county, and so county, I guess, okay, they're all like three different entities or whatever. So I was getting a quick learn on all of this. I didn't know any of this. Believe me, I didn't have a clue on anything. I got a quick 101 on all this. So I was in the holding cell, and it was horrible because it was cold. The floors are brick. The so-called mat you got is a sheet, basically, and the commode is right there where if you use it, everyone can watch you use it. It was just horrible. And the food, everything was horrible. And I remember just crying. And basically, my cry became this well. And I just wailed and wailed and wailed for hours. I just couldn't believe that I was in this situation. Put me in jail and try to send me away to the penitentiary. For a public education. I did wrong. I did use my parents' address. So just sue me. You know, if you think that I owe the public schools some funding, even though they got funded for my kids. But anyway, and I remember, you know, so the first, like I said, the first day I was in the holding, then from there they take you to the women's population area. And my case was so different that they kept me away from the regular population for at least maybe 3 days. And then eventually they went on and put me into the regular population of women. Now, I have to say this. I had never – this – what I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you're going to believe this or not, but this is major to me. When they walked me, and I remember getting, you know, you got these books you can get. I had my Bible. I was very keen on the 91st Psalm and the 21st Psalm, and I just kept those Psalms embedded in my head, and I kept the Bible with me the whole time. But let me tell you something. When I walked through those doors to go into the regular population, and I've never smelled this, and I haven't smelled it since, and I hadn't smelled it prior, but for some reason my psyche told me this was the smell of sin. When I walked
the smell of
doors,
sin?
Yes, ma'am.
It
was
wow.
You could smell it. When I walked through the doors, I looked up at the sheriff, and I said, I smell sin. And the sheriff looked at me and said, you're not the first person to say that.
The sheriff said, you are or you aren't?
No, the sheriff, it was a woman. She said, you are not the first person to have said what you just said.
I smell sin. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Wow, my goodness.
And I had never even thought to put to their life. But when I walked through those doors, when I went into the regular population with all of those other women, I actually smelled sin. And I looked at that sheriff and I said, I smell sin. And she looked at me and said, you are not the first person to say that.
That is so horrible. That is so horrible. Now, take us to what happened to your father. And then we'll go back to, we'll pick back up from you.
Where you are. So my father, like I said, we both still tried together. My dad was found not guilty. Now, my father was a sick man. He had been on disability, or I think it was a while. And I guess at a certain age from that, you need to go over from SSI to disability, or maybe it's vice versa. But anyway, he was on one, and he should have been on the other, and he did not know that. So let me explain something. When you get into the lion's den, it's not going to be easy just to walk away. So this was with venom. When they realized that the jury said, listen, we can't do anything with him because he didn't enroll the girls, and he didn't, that was his home. So the prosecutor started looking into different things. Next thing you know, they said, well, we're going to get him on this, and we're going to get him on that. So what they said was, they said, my mom stole $100,000 worth of health care. They said it was almost $100,000 worth of health care. So since you stole this $100,000 of health care, because they said that instead of him being on disability, he should have been on SSI or vice versa. I can't, honestly, I can't remember exactly what it was for verbatim, because at that time I was, they already had me in jail. So they sent
So you're saying that he was on one particular funding. So if he was on disability, that would be drawing from his Social Security that he worked for.
Correct.
And so you're saying that they were saying that he was on a different supplemental income, which now they're saying it was in error or in fraudulent, in a fraudulent manner?
They were saying fraudulent. They said it was fraudulent. They said that he stole, it was like, I think it was like $87,000, okay? It was something like that. I just rounded it off to 100. But they said it was like $87,000 that he stole health care, health benefits, because he was, my father was very sick. He had every ailment ever. So they said he had stolen this health care, not money, but health care. And we're going to send you to jail for 12 months. And so, of course, they found him guilty of stealing health care for a whole year. And so they sent him to the penitentiary 100 miles away because he was very sick. They sent him to Columbus. And he never came home.
Oh, my goodness. My heart goes out to your mother and your family.
It's horrible. Let me explain something.
It's reprehensible.
When we both went, I went to see my father. The first day I went to see my father, well, in the court, we were basically, because it's a word, I can't remember the words, okay, but basically I was A, he was B, okay, because remember, we stood trial together. So I was A and B. So, and he was a sick man.
Right, they're calling you a co-defendant.
Yeah, like that, yeah. And so I couldn't, I had to go back to court, my father's sick, he's sick, I had to go back to court, I had to go get all this paperwork done and get these things taken care of so I can go visit my father. We're driving 100 miles away, and I can't see him. Mm-hmm. And we're driving 100 plus miles away, and they're telling me, well, right, you can't see your father, you know. And so it was the small these things just added up, because it's just like, well, wait a minute, you know, we didn't this was, you know, we didn't do anything. It just didn't make sense. It just did not make sense. But finally, you know, when I was able to see him, I think I was able to see him one or two times, and those two times he was. He could talk, he could speak, and then, you know, as time went on, he was not able to, you know, he had many, many strokes and kidneys, and he had a trach in his throat, and he was not conscious anymore. It was just a mess. It was really hard because, you know, and I'm trying to be strong because I don't want to get all upset and cry and all that stuff right now.
But. Well, you know what, honey? You are with family, and you are able to feel how you need to feel. My arms are wrapped around you. I hug you. I hold you with a sisterly hug, and I am a daddy's girl, and I could not imagine what you were going through, and I cannot imagine the pain and the hurt that your heart had to feel. And so I'm really reaching out and giving you a big hug, and I want to thank you for just being able to, strong enough to tell your story. I appreciate you.
Thank you. It's more than a notion to be to bring this up and regurgitate all of this and talk about all these things again. And but I do have to say, and I remember the very last time I went to see my father, and I remember him lying there. My father was such a big man. I mean, he had that Muhammad Ali body built, you know, like he was just a big old strong man. Yes. He had a small waist and broad shoulders and his body was superb. So at the end when we went to see him, and everything was so frail, and he was just looked like he had lost, I don't know, 80 pounds or so. He just looked so tiny and so fragile, and I remember looking at him, and what hurt the most is that, you know, my father, he wasn't in jail for rape or murder or anything, and they had him shackled to the bed. And having him shackled to the bed, because I would take the cover, I didn't care. So while I'm there, I would take the covers off to see if they lotioned him up, to see if he's been taken care of at all. You know what I mean? So I would take the covers off his legs, and I would look at his legs and his feet, and I would make sure that he lotioned on his body, you know, like on his legs and his feet and stuff, his ankles and stuff, and then to see the chains shackled to the bed, it's like, well, where is he going to go? I mean, this man been on every beast, he's on dialysis. He's all messed up. They're trying to, of course, the doctors there were trying to get him home, and the courts were saying no, saying that he could flee. Where is he going? Like, how? Why would he flee anyway? His only home and any place he's ever been was Akron. My father never went outside of Akron. Like, he didn't have a passport to go anywhere. He was deathly ill, and they would not let that man come home to die. They left him there to die. And I just remember that last day looking at him, and I remember, you know, I just remember just asking my father to never forget us, you know, like I just said, don't forget us, you know, because I wasn't too sure where his mind was at as far as the stroke and everything. And, and I remember,
it's okay.
He looked at me. He was like, never. He shook his head. Like, never. I'll never forget you. And,
he never will. He is smiling down on you.
That's why I fight, and that's why I go to everything, and that's why I do everything, and I'm an advocate. I've always been an advocate. I love kids. I love children. And I've always... I've always, you know, had a passion for children, and so did my father and my mom. That's, you know, we really, really, you know, it's something about kids. They're so innocent and beautiful, and she just always have a great opportunity. And so that's why I fight for my father. I tell my story, and I don't care how bad it hurts. I tell my story because my father would give his shirt off his back for anyone who needed it. Anyone. And so let me tell you this. Okay, so when he passed away that night, it had to be around 12:20, and my mother called me and she said, Kelly, she said, the hospital's called and they said your father is, you know, he's gone. I said, what? I remember lying in the bed and I was looking up at the ceiling on the phone and I said, oh, you know, okay. I said, well, you know, I'm coming over. It's 12:30 at night. Me and my brother, we said we'll be there momentarily. I'm sure my brother said that because we ended up both over there. But anyway, I was at my place and I remember hanging up with her, and I just laid there for a minute. And I had this little dog. I had a little Yorkie, and that was my buddy. She got me through everything. Her name was Pebbles, and that was my baby. She got me through everything, all the stuff that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we're lying there in the bed, and out of nowhere, I heard something by my closet, and it made a noise, and I just knew without a shadow of a doubt, it was my father. I knew it was him.
Wow.
I knew it was him, but, you know.
It had to be. His spirit was free.
My dog looked over.
He could come back to you.
Yep, my dog looked over. I looked over and I was like, I know it's you, Dad. I know it's you, Daddy. And I just told him I was so sorry for all of this mess. And I knew he didn't want to be here anymore because he
he is so proud of you.
Thank you.
He is so proud of you.
He thought this world was just so mean. He thought it was so mean. He just was ready to go.
He is so proud of you, and I am so proud of you, and your mother is so proud of you. The love that you have in your heart for your father and your mother is what transcends into your children, and the love that you have, the activism, you have been given a surplus of love. That is why you are the woman that you are and why you have the passion that you have to work with the children. God chose you. Now, I know that this has been a rough journey, but God chose you for your voice to be the voice to champion for the children that you champion for. I am so very sorry for the journey and the hardship that the adversary would have the audacity to use you and your father as an example, all outside of the box of justice and the judiciary process, to come up with some bogus ass, yes, I said it, bull crap, to charge and come for your family and cause this type of divide, dissension, and degradation is just reprehensible. It's something that begs to be approached from a manner in which your family would gain retribution in the face of the judiciary process, because all of that smells funky as a skunk. That's about as sweet as I can put it. If I go any further, this will no longer be the Family Channel. It will be turned up too many notches to be considered family programming at this point. I am angry. I am hurt. I could scream. I cannot even imagine your hurt and your pain and the pain that your family has gone through. But I also cannot imagine the courage and the strength that you women have. You know, so I honor the queen of your life, your mother. I honor you, and I honor your daughters. You are queens in this journey together. You have been through it together.
Thank you.
And I also want to acknowledge your brother. I want to thank him for being there and going through the journey with your family. I know that when we come back on this show, April 18th, 2018 at 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 Central, 7 Eastern, right here on the same Tribe Family Channel. We are going to go even deeper into what this system does to impede an education, a fair education, when it comes to black and brown folk. Now, we discussed earlier before we got on this call, got on this radio show, that there was House Bill 788 that the representatives put together by Representative Stovall of the 74th District, Turner of the 21st District, and Jones of the 91st District in Georgia. And the bill to be entitled an act is to amend Part 13 of Article 6 of Chapter 2 of Title 20 of the Official Code of California, annotated relating to organization of schools and school systems under the Quality Basic Education Act, so as to provide that a parent or guardian may enroll a student in a school using the address of an individual residing in the school's attendance zone who has authorized such use, to provide for limited liability, to provide for related matters, to repeal conflicting laws, and for other purposes. Be it enacted by the General Assembly of Georgia in Section 1, it reads Part 13 of Article 6 of Chapter 2 of Title 20 of the Official Code of Georgia, annotated relating to the organization of schools and school systems under the Quality Basic Education Act, is amended by adding a new code section to read as follows: 20-2-296, notwithstanding any provision of law to the contrary, a student shall be allowed to attend and be enrolled in the school for which a parent or guardian certifies that an individual residing in the school's attendance zone has authorized such parent or guardian to use such individual's address for purposes of establishing residency. That's A. B. A parent or guardian or an individual residing in the school's attendance zone who has authorized such parent or guardian to use such individual's address shall not be criminally liable pursuant to Code Section 16-9-1-2, 16-10-20, 16-10-71, or any other law, and shall not be liable for any attorney's fees or other fees for the use of such individual's address to enroll a child in a school. That was Section 1. Section 2, all laws and parts of laws in conflict with this act are repealed. That is a one-page document with the simplicity of allowing someone to use the residency of someone that has authorized them to do so for the purpose of their child going to school in that area. A simple House Bill 788 during 2011, taking up less than one page of space, is all that is needed to be said and done to have allowed what they say you did in contrary and conflict to the law, and then subsequently resulting in your father's aid to help his grandchildren attain a better education, which now has resulted in him being displaced, you being incarcerated and having a record and going through all of that. But then, more horribly than your 10 days, is that your father would be sent away where he basically
be sent away to die because he never came home.
He never came home, but his livelihood, his health, everything diminished from that
Absolutely.
Point. And that
Absolutely.
Is just such a gross, negligent act that it's reprehensible in so many ways, in so many levels. It's just unspeakable. And I pray that your family gets the justice you deserve, and that one day, that same school would have to honor your father's name and memory in retribution to
yes.
your family. Now,
Absolutely.
That would be full circle. And I just really want to thank you for being transparent and honest and sharing your love, sharing your story, sharing your journey, and sharing your family's plight with us. This is the inaugural show of the Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. What we are going to do, I'm going to give you some closing words.
Okay.
I'm just going to say this. Yeah, we're not closing. But what I just want to say is that this show sets the tone for our approach to rectify and correct all the states that still do not have such a bill as 788. And we're going to start right there in Ohio. Now, you said that the very people that issued their media address about this, or in the actual, whatever headlines you saw, they cited you in that reporting. So tell us about that, who that was, where that was cited at, and then give us some closing comments.
Okay. Now, wait, I want to make sure I understand. You said, are you talking about the reporters, or what are you asking me again?
Well, you were telling me, and thank you for allowing me to clarify. We had a conversation, and they cited this case about you in Ohio
yes.
with
okay.
reference to Bill 788.
Yes.
What was that
Absolutely.
About?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. It was an article in the Journal News, and they just basically used my name as a reference. Basically, just acknowledging when I get Google alerts where if someone if someone writes a press release, I'll get an email if it has my name in it. I'll get an email so I can see what people are saying. If it's
Absolutely.
Good, bad, or whatever, I can see what's going on across the country. So that was the latest. That was one of the latest things I had received. Was that in itself? And it was just the Atlanta Journal News, and someone had wrote an article in regards to the 788 bill, and I had posted it. It was just something that she just wanted to reference my case to that bill, just letting people know that if this bill passes, then it's opportunity for, then parents can do that, parents and grandparents. And that's really huge to me, because, like I said, this fight is not about, it's way bigger than me, believe that. I was just a vein to help bills be passed or messages be relayed.
You were chosen.
My daughter's 23 and the other one's 19. So I still fight. I don't fight. My kids are so happy that they are up in age and that they're young adults now. But it doesn't stop
Praise
there.
Praise God. And I know you did a fantastic job along with your family.
Thank you. Yes. Well, sometimes I still wonder, but thank you. But no. But
you know they came out all right, girl. Our kids came out all right, considering we were dropped on our head. Okay. Now you know they used to tell us that. So
right.
Considering we were dropped on our head, girl, our babies came out good. Now, come on, now we did
good.
That.
That's right.
Yeah,
but
we
I
did that.
For other people, for grandkids. In people across this nation, not just
like I said, my kids are grown. Jeb Bush, former Governor Bush, called me 2 months ago and asked me to speak in regards to that, because he works on a campaign for excellence in education. You know, people call all the time. I did work for Jeff. Wait a minute. Kevin Johnson. He used to play for the Cavs. Now he's the mayor for California, or he was.
Sacramento.
California. I've done work for him. I've done work for Michelle Rhee, his wife. I've done HBO documentaries. I've got a documentary right now on Netflix called The Truth About Lies, and it talks about what happened to my case. It was a MSNBC production, or CNBC, I think, production. You know, believe me, I do this because I want to help our children. It's about the quality of education. It's about our children's future. Because let me tell you something, if you're in a situation where your kids can't be productive, then how do we expect our children to be productive citizens in society? Okay, they're not.
Amen.
But they will be labeled. But believe me, it won't. They won't be that elite society. That's not the label they're going to receive. So I fight every day for our children. I work with them every day. I work in a classroom with our kids. I'm a paraprofessional. I work alongside the children with behaviors, and every single day to redirect them in their aggression that they have. And they're not born with this. This comes from time and time again. It comes from years and years and years of situations that they've had to endure. If your child is put into a family environment, the chances of them being great and peaceful is just that much greater. So that's, I fight, and I just want people to know that they're not alone. I want these grandparents and parents and guardians to know that you're not alone, and you have people. I'm not the only one. You have many people fighting, but your voice has to be heard. You have to let us know what it is that you need, and we can come for your. We will come to bat for you, and that's all.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so very much. And to all of our listeners, Kelly Williams Bolar will be right back here April 18th, live on Tribe Family Channel, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, where we will be continuing to talk about her activism and the journey that she was inadvertently put on and chosen to do what she is doing. You can catch the archives of this show by following our studio, blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. Again, we want to thank our sponsors. We want to thank our sponsors, Geniuses Common. We want to thank Larry D. Davis, the author of The Education, I'm at a miss. I don't have my resources in front of me, but please visit us at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul, and you can see all of the flyers and the different shows and listen to this archived show. Kelly, thank you so much again for letting our listeners know that they are not alone. It is our pleasure and honor, and we want you to know, Kelly, you're not alone either. We're right here for you, and we will see you again next month, okay?
Okay, thank you. I can't wait.
Thank you, sweetie. And this song is for you and your family. Here you go. God bless.
Okay. God bless you, too. Bye, everybody.
Another day has